Ghosts. Have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And this is going to be a fascinating discussion tonight. I'm very interested in this subject. We've covered the idea in general before, but not one specific place. And that's the idea of haunted theaters. When you think about theaters, you think about the all the emotion that is on stage and so forth. And I think we're really going to have a good time tonight with our guest discussing this. And our guest is Alex Matsuo. She has written a book recently called The Haunting of the 10th Avenue Theater. She actually comes by this very honestly, writing this sort of book, because she has the perfect background. She's an actor, director, and playwright, as well as a paranormal researcher. She's investigated the paranormal for nearly a decade and is founder of the Association of Paranormal Study. Alex received her Master's of Arts in Theater Arts from San Diego State University in 2011. She currently hosts the Wicked Domain for Live Paranormal. And you can also visit her online at alexmatsuo.com. Alex, welcome to the program tonight.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about how you became introduced to this theater and why you decided to do a book on it.
Well, the 10th Avenue Theater originally started as a chapel, and it was purchased in the early 2000s by Jeff Cota. And he had a vision. He wanted to start it as a theater, but he actually didn't get around to that until about the mid-2010s. Well, no, not 2010s, but like around 2005-ish. It's ballpark number. And essentially, in the beginning of that, he was offering the space at a really good price for theater companies. And given that I'm from San Diego, we have a new theater company popping up every, you know, feels like every day sometimes. And a lot of opportunity for actors, performers, and directors to really get their art going. But one of the biggest issues we run into is space. And a lot of times theaters can cost thousands of dollars to rent just for a weekend. So when Jeff opened the 10th Avenue Theater, it really provided theater artists to have an opportunity to really put their art out there at a really inexpensive cost. So that's essentially how I got introduced. I did a few shows at the 10th Avenue Theater as an actor, did a few as a director, did a few projects as a playwright, doing stage readings of my works. And it was a wonderful opportunity. So, and it's really in a great place too. It's in downtown San Diego, and you know, people can get to it. It's got a really good vibe. It's right next to the gas lamp. So it really gave theater artists such as myself an incredible opportunity to get ourselves out there.
So tell us a little bit about the history of this theater. It strikes me, and it's kind of interesting because I'm fascinated by history. So anytime you can mix history with the paranormal, and particularly with some place that's a little older like this, I certainly think it's a great mix. So can you give us a little background on the theater in terms of when it was built and what was its original purpose? What did it do? Vaudeville? Did they do movies? Did they do stage plays? Tell us a little bit about this theater and its genesis.
Well, surprisingly enough, the 10th Avenue Theater started out as a chapel. It started off as a chapel that was built under commission of a really wealthy church member of the First Baptist Church of San Diego. And it was built in the early 1900s. Well, the construction started in the early 1900s. And it was built so that military people would have a place to worship no matter what time of day that, you know, that was present. Whether they came into port at like 2 a.m, they could go to the church and pray. So the 10th Avenue Theater opened around, I want to say 1925 and 1928. And so from there, that's where originally that's how it started. And it was a actually a really good, it's a good sized building with multiple floors. So it also got used for other things. It got used for the church's youth program. The First Baptist Church of San Diego had thousands of members. So that led to having hundreds of kids. Let's see, Elks Club, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts would have their meetings at the chapel. So, and there was a few instances of tragedy and trauma that happened in the building. And essentially what happened was the church decided to move from their downtown San Diego location to about 20 minutes north and a little bit inland. So essentially they shut their doors on the main building, the White Chapel, which is right next to the 10th, as well as the chapel itself that we know now as the 10th Avenue Theater. So it sat dormant for quite a while until Jeff ran into it. I asked him, I said, what was it about this building? Because who buys an old church these days? And Jeff said it was at a really good price. So he, at the time, he said he didn't even know what he wanted to do with that building, but the price was so good, he just had to buy it. So part of the deal that he had with the church was he purchased the building, but they needed to keep their organ in the building for a little bit while longer. And, you know, Jeff was okay with that. And so the day came that the church was coming in to, you know, collect their organ, and Jeff was helping them take things down. And Jeff hadn't really spent a lot of time in the building because, like I mentioned, he didn't know what he wanted to do with it. And this volunteer, this church volunteer, started telling him all of these stories about things that would happen in the building. All these stories from the church's past that now turn into ghost stories. And at the time, Jeff was like, he still remains very skeptical to this day, and I really respect him for that. And so he basically started renting out the offices in the building, because there's about four stories total, and as well as a basement and a roof. So he started renting out the office spaces to, you know, local people. And he was getting calls and complaints about how there's a child running up and down the stairwell. And he's thinking, okay, maybe it's one of the tenants.
Right.
Nope, it wasn't one of the tenants. And he just said, hey, guys, just don't bring your kids. And they're like, we're not bringing any kids. Also, people having the feeling of being watched in the main sanctuary area, which is now the main stage area for those who know the 10th Avenue Theater. And a lot of really weird things are starting to happen. And then once the theater itself got established as a theater, about 2007-ish, he was starting to hear a lot of stories from techies. And that's a theater term. And for anyone who wants to know what a techie is, they're the people behind the stage or in the backstage area. They're the ones who are moving the set pieces. They're designing the lights, calling the cues, changing the costumes. God bless them. We wouldn't exist without them. They would often spend a lot of late nights in the theater, you know, painting, maybe working on lights, you know, doing all these different things. But Jeff was starting to hear all these stories about how people were being watched, things were being moved, all of these different things. And it really started to, I don't want to say alarm, but it started to concern Jeff a little bit. But it was something that he kept in the back of his pocket, because he didn't go out and tell everybody, hey, everybody, there's a ghost in my theater, because he didn't want to scare off any potential renters. And also, it was a time where, you know, it still exists a little bit right now, where if you think there's a ghost around, people think you're crazy. So it wouldn't be a good business decision for him to come out with that. So, and then once I started going around the 10th, I was having very similar experiences, but it wasn't until my staged reading where of one of my plays where I said, okay, I have to get into this space. So a really interesting experiences from that.
Now, the thing is that, you know, when you think of a theater that's a place that's been a theater for a long, long time from its inception, you think about all of the emotion that's connected to it. You think about people playing comedy, people playing drama, basically life and death acted out on stage. But This isn't the same case with this place because it came to be a theater later in its life. However, I would assume that a church would have many of those same emotions attached to it.
Oh, I completely agree. If you think about it, church and religion in general is very theatrical. You know, you have somebody up there on the pulpit, you have people in the audience or in the pews who are emotionally responding to what the preacher is saying. I mean, theater itself was incepted from religion. The earliest evidence that we have of theater comes from the ancient Greeks who were doing performances and songs and dancing all for the gods. And that turned into theater. And so I actually, there was another publication I wrote, oh gosh, 2 or 3 years ago called The Haunted Actor. And I really go into the detailed history of theater and the relationship it has with religion. And it's truly fascinating because, you know, there's costumes, especially in the Catholic Church. I'm not calling the Catholic Church a theatrical production. I very much respect the Catholic faith. But, you know, you have the clothing that you wear, there's certain words that you have to say. The pastor, preacher, bishop, priest, they have to prepare what they're going to say in front of this audience. And like I mentioned, there are emotional responses to what is said. Depending on what kind of church you go to, you may have people screaming and wailing in the pews, mm-hmm. you know, crying out to God. So, And this church did start off as a Southern Baptist church, and I was raised Southern Baptist, and I have a little bit of experience in that area. Very, very similar. You have a very emotional connection to the text, to the music, the singing, the words out of the Bible. I mean, it's a very spiritual place, regardless of what religion you follow. And theater is a very spiritual place as well. There is a man, his name is Brian Bates. He wrote a book called The Way of the Actor, where he compares actors to shamans and how actors take people on a spiritual journey, kind of like how religious leaders do.
Now, you hinted there a little bit about your own experience. Can you tell us about some of your experiences in the theater that helped inspire you to delve into this more deeply?
Yeah, sure. So, one of the biggest things that I would experience at the theater was the feeling of being watched. In the main stage, what used to be the sanctuary, if you walk in, that's basically where you see the stage and whatnot. And then behind you, up in this, you could say a balcony is the tech area. So that's where the soundboard is. Light board, that's where all of that stuff is. So it's kind of like the heart of the theater. And one of the biggest things people will tell Jeff about and also tell me about is they will feel like they're being watched from there. And the connection with that is that space is haunted by a British lieutenant. His origin story is a bit fascinating. It was during World War II. There was a doctor who was working in Japan. He was, you know, trying to save people who were injured from the war. And there was one particular soldier, a British lieutenant, who essentially died while he was on the surgery table. And the doctor had his hand over the lieutenant's beating heart as he died. So that shook up the doctor quite a bit. And when he pulled into port in San Diego, he went straight to the 10th Avenue Theater, the First Baptist Church of San Diego, the chapel. Sure. And while he was there praying for the souls that he had lost, he started to have a seizure, convulsing, and he fell to the floor. And apparently he was just fine after a few minutes, but afterwards the staff started to report that they were hearing a man's voice in the sanctuary calling out orders, and it was in a British accent. So, and we've brought in a few psychics. Jeff brought in psychics of his own and, you know, didn't tell him any sort of situation that was happening.
Sure.
Didn't tell him anything. And they all seem to pick up on the same person, a man in a military uniform. It's not a U.S. uniform, but it could be British. And that he stands and watches over in the balcony area. So that was one thing I would experience a lot, the feeling of being watched. But one of the more alarming experiences I had was, this was during my stage reading, and actually any time that I've really been in that space, you know, in an informal setting, so not during a production, but maybe during a rehearsal, I like to lean up against the curtain on the sides of the theater. So it just helps with acoustics. There's curtains there, and we, you know, we use stuff for storage and stuff back there. And you would think that there's a maybe there's a door or something behind there, but you will feel somebody, you know, touching your shoulder or holding your hand or running their fingers up and down your arm, like they're kind of trying to give you a bad massage. And you pull the curtain away, there's nothing there. It's just a wall. So it's a little, I don't want to say disturbing, but it definitely does not, you know, doesn't make you feel at ease to want to lean up against that wall again. Also in the sanctuary, main stage area, it's mainly backstage. And that's of course where the dressing rooms are. There's a bathroom back there. Really, hopeless feeling, a dark feeling, not saying it's evil. Just very depressing, dark. It's not a spot. You feel very unsettled there. I've had people burst into tears in that specific spot. It seems that no matter who I bring into the theater to check out the place, whether it's an paranormal investigator, a researcher, a medium, they always seem to, once they go by that area backstage, they're very, very disturbed. And I've had similar experiences, and I try not to go back there if I can manage it. And then this was the big dramatic experience I had at the 10th. It was during my stage reading of Japanese Eyes, American Heart. And my person who was supposed to work on the light board flaked on me at the last minute. So mm-hmm. I didn't have anyone to work the lights for the show. So I told my actors, I said, listen, it's a stage reading. So essentially don't start the play until you see the house lights go down, meaning the lights over the audience. So I was giving my introduction about what the piece was about and whatnot. And so I had to run in heels through the theater, up the stairs to get to the light board, had to pull out the key because, of course, that's under lock and key because it's like $3,000 worth of equipment. And I opened the door, and I hear my actors have already started. And I'm sitting here like, did they just go against like the one direction I gave them? So, but I look and the house lights are down. Somebody had already turned down the lights. And So I watched the video that my mom took of the play. I talked to a few of my friends who were in the audience, and I said, how soon did the lights go down after I was done talking? And they said, immediately. It was, you know, did your person show up? And I'm like, no, they didn't. So somebody turned down the lights for me who wasn't there. So that was probably the experience where I said, okay, that's it. I need to go check this place out.
Now, do you think that you talked about the military man and so forth? Do you think that first of all, what do you think are there? Do you think it's human? Do you think it's non-human? Do you think it's malevolent, benevolent, a mix of both? What kind of spirits do you think are frequenting the theater?
Well, we have identified about 4 ghosts there so far. And I say so far because there are multiples there. It seems that the 10th Avenue Theater is a hub for paranormal activity. There always seems to be something going on, and we tend to pick up on different spirits all the time. Even people who have been there numerous times will pick up on somebody new. But at the same time, I don't think that's really that odd, because this place has, you have the main stage, and then there's a theater on the 4th floor. There's an art gallery. There's stuff going on the roof. There's a wine cellar in the basement now. There's so much energy going on in this place from both human and electrical. So I haven't run into anything that is malevolent yet. We do have a presence there that is rather dark, and that is the pastor who committed suicide in 1963. There's actually been two deaths that have happened at the theater that we know of. The first one was of a young girl, and I say young as in preteens. Her name was Missy. She was a member of the church who was in the youth program, and the pastor that I mentioned, he was the youth pastor. As far as I know, I have not found anything to dispute that yet. Him and Missy were on the roof, and Missy wanted to go inside. It was October of 1963. It was hot, and the pastor said, "No, Missy, you can't go yet." And Missy disregarded what the pastor said, and she went ahead and left the roof and started running down the stairs. And the pastor said, "Wait, you know, come back. You can't do that." So he started to chase after her, and she thought it was a game. So she starts running down the stairs, and she says, "Catch me if you can, catch me if you can, catch me." And then she lost her footing, and she ended up falling, landing on her head, and she essentially split her head open. Oh, so goodness. She died. She died instantly. So Missy died from that. And the pastor was very much ridden with guilt the whole time. You can just imagine with the circumstances of everything that happened. He couldn't take it. And it was the Sunday after JFK's assassination. The secretary was going into the sanctuary that Monday. She went in there and she saw the pastor hanging from the choir rafters.
Oh, my Lord.
And that is the spot that I mentioned earlier where you feel a very much a hopeless feeling, a very dark, depressing feeling. He tends to haunt the fourth floor theater in the dressing room, which is actually right above that space in the main stage I mentioned. So anytime that we've tried to establish communication with him, he tends to pace around. He walks around the fourth floor theater. It's a very small theater. It seats like maybe 20, 30 people. He doesn't really like to talk, but I mean, if you're cordial and respectful, he may open up to you a little bit. So those are the two deaths that happened at the theater. Missy is still around. She's the child that likes to run up and down the flights of stairs. She's very playful. She's very imaginative. She's very conscious. She's very aware. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who is that, who is one who's deceased and two who I can have an intelligent conversation with.
Wow.
Yeah. And the big thing is, and this is why I tell like tours that come around and stuff, they'll bring toys, but they're toys for like small children. And I say, no, you don't want to do that. Cause one, she's going to get mad. And if she gets mad, she doesn't necessarily like harm you, but she definitely is a bit mischievous. And devious. But she likes sweets. So if any of you go to the 10th Avenue Theater and you want to talk to Missy, make sure you bring some candy. She loves candy. She very much responds to that. And actually, this is a funny story. This was actually the first time that we had investigated as a team. I had a lot of military men on my team at the time. And after I had talked to Jeff about investigating, he basically gave me the key and said, "Have fun," which, you know, that's really cool when you're entrusted with the key like that. But there was one time he needed my key. And so he told me to leave the key in his office on the fourth floor. And it was at the end of the night. We actually had a really productive investigation. But I told my two guys, Jay and Hurst, I said, "Hey, guys, can you go put the key back for me?" Because I didn't want to go up all the stairs again. And I don't like to use the elevator there because it's literally from the 1920s and it's been updated, but I want to play it safe. So the guys, you know, go up the stairs and Jay's wife, Beverly, is in the lobby with me. And I just joked with her. I said, "Wouldn't it be funny if they saw a ghost, like an actual apparition?" And all of a sudden I hear the guys like screaming, and I see Jay like jumping three or four steps at a time to try to get down the stairs faster. And Hurst is just going like, no, 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 no. And I'm sitting here like, oh my gosh, what happened? And basically what happened was when they were returning the key, they heard a young girl's voice say, mommy. Very inquisitive, just like, mommy. And we're pretty sure that was Misty. And she managed to scare my two Marines to death, half to death.
That's funny.
And because it was funny because they were like, well, why is she asking, saying mommy and all this stuff? And this was when I was first getting to know Missy. And I'm like, well, why would she be calling for her mommy? I mean, common sense would say, yeah, she misses her mom. But you have these two guys by themselves on the fourth floor. And that's actually where she's the most active. You know, they're by themselves. They're spooked already. Jay had a camera and Hurst had an audio recorder, and we actually were able to pick up mommy on both devices. So that was actually really cool. So I knew they weren't making it up or just like, you know, skittish. And at the end of the day, I was kind of like, you know what? I think she was just messing with them. I think she was just trying to scare them. So
now, yeah. When you talk about your team, can you talk about maybe your kind of philosophy and the methods you use in investigation? In other words, you know, you have some people who just kind of go in with their senses and sight and sound and maybe take some notes and things. And then you have, on the other extreme, people who are tricked out with the, you know, EVP meters and recorders and cameras and so forth. Where do you fall on that continuum? Kind of what is your philosophy?
We fall a little bit in the middle. I'm very much somebody who I like to use many different kinds of tools, and I do consider psychic mediums tools too. Because if you find correlating evidence or you have correlating experiences with what your device is picking up and what the psychic medium is picking up, then that's something that warrants further investigation. So we do have tech. I mean, we have cameras. We have audio recorders. I'm skeptical on EVP just because it's a theater. I can't really do a good baseline reading of the EVP in the theater because it's fluctuating all the time. Depending on what the rooms are being used for, depending what the theater is being used for. If the theater doesn't have a production at the time, the EVP is pretty low in that space. But if there is a show going on, it's pretty high. And the 10th is also used for like weddings and other events. So, you know, we could be getting a hit on the EVP meter, but that's not going to necessarily mean it's a ghost. It's probably going to mean there was a spike in the electricity somewhere and, you know, someone forgot to turn the soundboard off or something.
Sure.
Cause microphones are used too. So, and also radios, you know, that's how the stage managers communicate with people. I've been experimenting with the ovulus a bit. I used to be pretty skeptical of it, but I did have a pretty interesting interaction with it at the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital back in April. So I'm integrating it a little bit more. I do have a Shack Hack ghost box that I've been using. I've gotten some pretty interesting hits on that. And we'll also use some parapsychological experiments like Gonsfeld. It's a sensory deprivation experiment. Essentially, it's used for people to telepathically communicate, but some teams and groups have used it to see if maybe ghosts can use that to communicate as well.
Is it kind of like scrying or the psychomantium or something like that?
Well, what it is you have white ping pong balls over your eyes, so you have a white plane of sight, and then you also have headphones on where you have white noise going. We've experimented with pink noise and different kinds of frequencies too, and you're also looking at a red light. So you don't have your sight, you don't have your hearing, and you got the red light in front of you, which is supposed to keep you alert and prevent you from going to sleep. But I'll tell you, at 4 a.m. in the morning, sometimes it's not that effective. But so we've been experimenting with that for a few years now. We also do Gonsfeld sessions as a team, like in our home or, you know, some or someplace else. I'm actually in Raleigh. I'm not too far from the Ryan Research Center, and they actually have a whole Gonsfeld room, which is actually pretty cool to look at. So we'll do that. We did have a few team members who were really good at scrying. And mostly they get images, so they sketch out what they see. I started experimenting with something called Kanzari cards. They were given to me for free at a conference, and there's like, just try it out. And supposedly the ancient Egyptians used them to communicate with the dead. And I'm like, okay, it reminded me a little bit of tarot. So I used it at the 10th Avenue Theater. I want to say in June. I think, yeah, it was June. And so I was using the cards. I basically said, you know, if you want to, hey, Missy, you know, pastor, lieutenant, Carol, that's another ghost that we have there. You want to talk to me, you know, let's try this. And I want to say I have a good relationship with the ghosts, but they know me and they know what I'm looking for. And they're like old friends to me. So I put out the cards, and two of the cards that came up, it's just basically pictures and words. One card had suicide and the other card had stairs.
Oh my.
So yeah, when that happens, you take pause a little bit.
Yeah, kind of figure you have a hit there. Do you think the spirits that are there, are they happy there? Do they want to be there? Are they trapped? Do you have any feel for that?
As far as I know, they're not trapped. We do have a few that may feel trapped, like the pastor. This is going to sound a little silly, but I feel like we've had a few intervention type meetings with him, between us as a team, psychic mediums. And we even had someone with a counseling background there too. Like suicide counselor, just to talk to him and say, you know, you can move on. Cause we're getting the hint that he is still at the 10th to watch over Missy. And also he's feeling a lot of guilt for what happened. And we think he probably had a little bit of a sullied past too, which is preventing him from moving on or crossing over. Cause I think he's worried about judgment. So we've had a few meetings with him. So as far as I know, he's there by choice. Missy seems to be having a ball at the theater. I think she's definitely there by choice. Now, there is another ghost there. Her name is Carol LaRocque. She is haunting the third floor restrooms. In life, she was a member of the church. Her funeral was actually at the chapel. And she had a little bit of OCD. She was one of those church members, very endearing. You wanted to love her, but she was also very vocal about her opinions on how the church should look and run. So I think one of the big things that really set her off was the bathrooms on the third floor, specifically the men's restrooms. They weren't really built properly, like the stall doors, like they were hinged differently. One door would swing out, one door would swing in, like nothing was consistent. Same thing with the women's restrooms. And my team actually discovered her by accident because they were getting a lot of hits on their ovulus and EVP meters, because one of them had used the bathroom, but he didn't really leave the bathroom very clean as far as I know. And all of a sudden things started to like go off. So the team went in there and essentially they got a name and they asked Jeff about it. And I talked to my contact, who used to be a member of the First Baptist Church of San Diego. And sure enough, there was a woman. We found out there was a woman named Carol LaRocque who was really ticked off about the way those bathrooms were built. And apparently she's still haunting the theater. And it's so funny because when I got in there, I'm like, okay, so how can I get to talk to this woman? And so essentially what I did was I trashed the bathrooms.
Oh my. So it's kind of entrapment.
Basically, I want to call it passive provoking. Like I just started like pulling out the toilet paper and putting it in the toilet and leaving paper towels on the floor, leaving the sink on. And I was like, okay, let's see what happens. And sure enough, like you started to feel like this looming presence over you, like almost like, you know, when your mom comes up to you and you haven't cleaned your room in a few weeks. And like our devices were going off. I was hearing stuff on the ghost box and the ovulus that we had, it was like mess, clean it up, mess, dirty, pig, you know, it was like all these words like pigsty. And I'm like, okay, well, hello, Carol. How are you? I will clean up.
There you go. Wow. Wow. let you know that she was upset. So, I mean, that was a question I had. Do you feel that, I know there's a process, I believe in the Catholic Church, and I'm assuming with other churches, when it's desacralization or something like that, when a sanctuary is repurposed for another use, there's a ceremony mm-hmm. and so forth. I don't know if it's that way in this particular religion. In addition to that person, are there any people who are maybe upset, any spirits that are upset that it's being used for something other than a church?
I imagine that there is, and that's why I think there's more than one. The British lieutenant, I'm not really sure what his business is there with the theater. I'm assuming he likes the space and he's staying there. But it's kind of funny because there was a production that happened, oh, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago. It was called Deconstruction of a Drag Queen. And the cast and the crew, they were experiencing a lot of malfunctions with their lights, particularly after they would be talking about STDs or anything connected with homosexuality. Like the lights would flicker every time they talked about it. There was one word that really set off the lights, and I don't know why it did, but anytime someone said herpes, the lights would wow. like turn on and off. Yeah, of all words, herpes.
Sounds like it hit a sore spot. Never mind.
I know, right? That's what I was thinking. But yeah, so that's probably one of the biggest pieces of evidence I found. And this was by a group of numerous people, and nobody's up in the light board that have testified to this. And it's actually happened periodically since then. Anytime there's been a production there that's not necessarily biblical or have biblical standards, tech-wise, things kind of go off, and props may go missing sometimes too.
And where do you go from here? I mean, are you going to continue to investigate it? Where are you at with your relationship with the 10th Avenue Theater?
The relationship is really good. Jeff and I talk regularly, and my team, the team that right now is in San Diego, I have two chapters of my team, one in San Diego, one in Raleigh. The San Diego team still keeps a good connection with them, and they periodically still do ghost hunts. And I've had people tell me that they've tried to cross over the ghosts there, and Jeff and I both feel the same way. It's like, well, if they want to go, they can go. So we definitely, Jeff doesn't charge any money at all for any of these ghost hunts either. So he's definitely not making a profit from it. He just wants to know what's going on. And he just wants to get some validation and some verification of what's going on. So he's doing very well with that space as a theater. So there's no money to be made for sure. So we're still going to keep going with the ghost hunts. If someone can make a really good connection, that would be wonderful. If we could get a full body apparition sometime, that would be great too. Just to have that proof that there is life after death, and our consciousness does survive. So, and until the ghosts at the 10th say that they're done and they want to go, I mean, I guess we'll just keep going.
Very cool. Alex, where can people find more information about your paranormal work, and where can they find the book?
Cool. You can find me at alexmatsuo.com. There I have blogs and of my work. You can also check out my team at associationofparanormalstudy.com. There you can find our research blogs. I'm also on Facebook. There's Twitter, you can basically email me, contact me from anywhere these days. And you can find my book on Llewellyn.com. That is the publisher. And you can also find the book on Amazon. And if you would like a signed copy of the book, you know, feel free to touch base with me and I will be happy to do that.
Alex Matsuo, thank you for joining us tonight, and happy haunting.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to Ghost Insight. We appreciate it. We're into a new year, well into 2016. I hope you're having a good one. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.